Okay, we're starting here on the bottom of Tzadi Vedam Abed, four lines from the bottom. Barmine Levi, Nitaz, Mi Begad the Begad Mahu. So Levi asks, what happens if the blood splashes from one Begad onto another Begad? Mi Begad Kama Idchile the Kibus, Odumalo. Is it after it touched the first Begad, since it requires Kibus already, therefore it's already deemed to be Pasula Hazaya, and therefore when it bounces to the second Begad, it has no impact? Odumalo. Or maybe it has no effect because you have yet to be mechabesit, and therefore it's not yet deemed to be pasul. When it bounces off this beged to the other beged, you'll still be chayav to do kibus on it. Amalei, zo sheila? That's a great question. And the answer is the following. Ta'un kibus mimanafshach. It requires kibus no matter what you hold. Iospo v'kasher. If you believe if the dam is gathered in after the fact that it is kasher, ha-kasher, then the blood is kasher the hazaya, and then if it hits the other beged, it'll still be ta'un kibus because it's ra'ui the hazaya. V'osfo pasul, if you believe that when you gather it together, it makes it pasul, meaning after the fact if you try to gather the blood, ana k'Rabbi Akiva sfirle. I hold the Rabbi Akiva, damar haita la shata kosher, v'nifsala dama ta'un kibus. That if there was any point in time that the korban was ra'ui to hazaya, then the blood, even after it is pasul, will still cause a problem of kibus. This follows the position of Rabbi Kiva, who says as long as there was a shata kosher, there was a point in time when this was ra'ui the hazaya, even though it's currently pasul, it still has a requirement of kibus. And we're going to see that machloket between Rabbi Kiva and the chachamim upcoming. In the end, the answer is going to be that it's ta'un kibus, no matter what you hold with regards to osfo, whether osfo is pasul or osfo is kasher. You're still going to have a requirement of kibus in this case. So, Bamine Rami Bar Chama Rav Chisda. So now, Rami Bar Chama asked Rav Chisda, Nitaz al beged tamei mahu. If the blood splashes onto a beged that is tamei, what's the din? So, Amar Rav Huna Breid Rav Yeshua. So, Rav Huna Breid Rav Yeshua says, Midikam Baile Hochi. The fact that the question was posed in this manner, Shmamina Haita La Shata Kosher. That it had a time period where it was ra'oi, v'nifsala, ein dama ta'un kibus. And then it becomes pasul, the dam does not require kibus. What he is saying is that you can at least make some conclusion with regards to certain factors by the nature of how the question is posed. You're posing the question about dam that splashes onto a beged tamei. The assumption being that once it hits the beged tamei, because of the tuma, it makes it pasul. And the other part of the assumption is, if it was pasul, it would not need kibus. So that means that even if it had a shata kosher, there was a point in time where it was ra'ui l'hazaya. At this point, now that it's pasul, it no longer requires kibus. So that would be at least the conclusion you would draw from the way that the question was posed. And that would mean, not like Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Kiva says shata kosher is what determines whether you need kibus. This would seem to indicate that that is not a consideration in this question, because the question is, once it hits the beged and becomes pasul, is that no longer require kibus, or does require kibus? But if you hold like Rabbi Kiva, it wouldn't matter, because as long as you had a shata kosher, even if it becomes pasul later on, you would still require kibus. So by the nature of how you pose the question, it indicates to us that you don't hold like Rabbi Akiva. That's number one. Number two, which is not mentioned by the Gemara, it also seemingly answers the previous question. Nitaz mi beged the beged the mahu. So over here, the Gemara says, if it splashes onto a beged tamei, because it was a beged tamei, that's what's making it pasul over here. Had it not been a beged tamei, then it would require kibus. And that seems to indicate that osvo kasher. And then that would answer the previous question by Levi, which means that once it requires kibus, that is not automatically posel it. So seemingly, the way the question is posed also assumes, it's almost like an imtim tzalomar. If you say that once a beggar requires kibus, that does not posel the dam, then what happens when it hits a beggar tamei, where the tuma would be posel it, rather than the kibus? There are those, like the Sfatamet, that want to indicate that it's not necessarily the progression of the Gemara, because you could differentiate. You could say that there's a difference between the psul of Tuma, which is a psul that's inherent to any issue of Kodesh, versus the requirement of Kibus, which is a Gzerat HaKatu. So even if you believe that Tuma makes something psul, and then it would no longer require a Kibus, that still doesn't mean just because something requires Kibus, that it can't be pasul. Because here the possibility is that Gzeret HaKatuv is that it requires kibus beged, even though it's deemed to be pasul, once there is a requirement of kibus. Just because now we're saying that if the beged was tamei, it would be pasul, implying that if it was tahor, it would not be pasul. That's not necessarily true. It could be that even when it was Tahor, it was Pasul. But over there, there's Xerda Katuv, a kibus, which, and therefore, even if it splashed from this Begit to another Begit, it would not require kibus because it was already Pasul in the first Begit. And so therefore, you can't necessarily extrapolate from the fact that we're asking the question about Tumah to the previous question that was posed by Levi. Because it might be that that's Xerda Katuv. Xerda Katuv is that it requires kibus. And therefore, the Sfat Emet says, just because the question was posed this way, doesn't indicate an answer with regards to the question that was asked by Levi before. Alright, so then he explicates on the question and explains what's the nature of the question here. When the blood hits the Begit and the Begit is Tamei, Hani Mile Bezechar Zeh, it's only true that blood does not require kibus when the psul happened first and then it touched the Begit. Aval Bevat Achat, when they happen simultaneously, maybe there's still a requirement of kibus. O Dilma Loshna, or maybe it makes no difference. And whether it happens simultaneously or whether it happens the psul before and then it splashes onto the Begit, either way it will not require kibus because at this point it's dam that is pasul. Amale, so he responded to him. Plukto Rabbi Elazar v'Rabbanan. It is the machloket of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbanan aliba d'Rabbo uchadimitaritz Abaye. It's the way that Rabbi explains it, the way that Abaye explains Rabbo, or in the end questions Rabbi's explanation and gives an alternate explanation. So it is a machloket of Tanaim based on an explanation of the Amoraim. And now the Gemara is going to take the time to explain that. Titania, Rabbi Elazar Omer mechatat. Shinitmeu mitaharin. Mechatat that become tamei are able, have the capacity to mitaher. Share nida mazina leha. There's no restriction against doing tarat paraduma, meaning the sprinkling of the waters with the ashes of paraduma on a nida. A nida has a separate issue of tuma, independent of her tuma tamei. Nevertheless, we don't stop you from doing hazah shlishi and shvi on the nida. And then when she goes to the mikveh to be mitaher herself from the tumat nida, that will also be mitaher her from the tumata meit. So you see from this that when you sprinkle onto a nida, the meichatat work. That doesn't necessarily prove to you that meitorim work, except for Amar Rabbo, Rabbi Lazar b'shita Rabbi Akiva Rabbo Amra, Rabbi Lazar ben Shamoa is following the shita of his Rebbe Rabbi Akiva, the Amar, havarat kli, agabe makom tamei, kimunach dami. That when you move a kli over an area that is tamei, it's as if you set the kli down in that location, and therefore it takes on the tum'ah, ditnan. And now we're going to explain this from a Mishnah in Para. Just as an aside, you might remember this from the Gemara in Shabbat, where we have a question about zorek, when you're throwing an object that goes through different rishiyot, like from Rishut Arabim through Rishut Yachid, or another areas where it never lands there, what is the status of an object in motion? And there we had a machloket, the Chachamim in Rabbi Kiva, as whether pluta kemisha huncha damya or not kemunach dami. Meaning that when you have an object in motion, is it considered as if you're moving through discrete steps of the motion? And therefore it's as if at every moment there's an akira and a hanacha, akira and hanacha, or is it considered to be a continuum? And therefore we don't look at it as being settled in any place. So that machlok between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim exists in the Gemara and Shabbat. When you have an object that's thrown or moving through, do we view it as being in motion and therefore there's no akiran anacha? Or do we look at it as if it's a movement through discrete points, and each point is an akiran anacha, and based on that, you have now an akiran anacha in a different reshut, which would make you chayav. So now Gemara says that Rabbi Elazar over here, Rabbi Elazar ben Shamoa, follows the shita of Rabbi Akiva, and that means that we are equating this machloket to that same machloket in the Gemara and Shabbat, the Tanan. Hayomeid chutz l'tanur, b'sheretz b'tanur. He's standing beyond the tanur, and the tanur has a sheretz inside of it. A sheretz inside of a tanur, it's a kli cheres. The tanur in their day was a kli cheres with an opening on the top. And the sheretz inside of it means the entire avir of the kli cheres is tameh. Roshid yadao lecholon. Beyond the oven is a window. Natala telagin. And on that window is a pitcher. There is some sort of bottle full of the mechatat. Veheviro al piatanur. And then he pulls it from the window over the tanur towards himself. Rabbi Akiva mitameh. Vechachamim mitaharim. Rabbi Akiva thinks that you've now been mitamei, the mei chatat, and they're no longer usable. Chamim mitaharim. And the chamim say it's tohor. Ubehaplige, what's their machloket? The Rabbi Akiva savar kimunachtami. Rabbi Akiva thinks when you pull the pitcher over the oven, so even though you're in motion, it's as if all along that continuum, you picked it up, put it down, picked it up, put it down. And it's as if you placed it down into the oven, and then it would make it tamei. Rabbanan sabri lav kumunach tamei. And the Rabbanan think that it's lav kumunach tamei. And so based on that, Rab was trying to explain the machloket between Rabbi Lazar and the Chachamim, based on that machloket, Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim. So Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim argue about whether it's kumunach tamei. And similarly, over here, which we're going to see in a second, this machlok between Rabbi Lazar and the Chachamim, with regards to mechatat shenitme'u, whether they have the capacity to mitaher, comes from a question about nida mazina leha. It comes to sprinkling on a nida, is it considered to be a precedent or a paradigm from which we can learn? Because when you sprinkle on the nida, the waters, once they reach to the air space of the nida, they already take on the tumata nida. And so they're already tmeim beforehand. And then when they actually land on the nida and are mitaher her, they were already tmeim. The Chachamim say that when something is in motion, it's lav kimunach dami. It is not as if it's settled down. And therefore, until it reaches the nida, the water is not tmeya. And so now you can't prove to me anything about waters of the para that are tmeim. Because the din with regards to a nida is only once it hits the nida. At that point, the waters only became tmei at the same moment they hit the nida, bevat achat, and you can't prove to me anything about waters that were tmeim before that point in time. On the other hand, Rabbi Akiva believes it's kimunach tami, and now Rabbi Lazar, in his opinion, says that can act as a paradigm, because the waters, while they're in motion towards the nida, actually take on the tumata nida before they actually touch her. So that means the mechatat already became tmeya before it touched the nida, and yet it's still successful being mitaher her. And so that's the machloket between the Chachamim, Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Lazar, and the Chachamim. And based on that, the question is, when you sprinkle on Nida, who everybody agrees, it works, it makes her Tehora, can that be used as a paradigm to say that anytime the Mechatat or Tmeim, that they're still functional? And Rabbi Lazar says yes, the Chachamim say no. So that's the way that Rabbi explains their Machloket. The Balei HaTosafot over here ask a very fundamental question, which is, with regards to Tuma, we find that there are many mishnayot in para that restrict one from moving water over things that are tmeim. And how come over here the Gemara is saying, mechatat becomes tmei, you can utilize it? Why would anybody think that if there's so many gzerot in place and so many issues with regards to taking the mayim for the mechatat, that we won't let you take it in a boat, we won't let you take it over a river? Those were because of maaseh shehayah. There were incidents that happened where they had problems and it became tmei. But then they were gozer there because they don't want it to become tamei, but tumat tamei. So the Balei Tosafot over here give one answer, which is v'yesh lamar, the hatam kodem kiddush, that over there it's the waters before they sanctify the waters with the afar. In that case, we worried about it become tamei. If it becomes tamei, it's problematic. V'hocha, in our gemara, it's lachar kiddush. Once it's already sanctified, the ashes are put in the water, it's made into mechatat, then it's no issue with terms of ming mekabel tuma. That's how the Balei Tosafot answer over here. You look over on the side, the notes over there note that there's a Tosafot in Chagiga that answers differently, and he answers that there's a difference between Tumata Mate and other forms of Tuma. The only problem with the guards to Mechatat is if they become to Mate Tumata Mate. That's because their whole function is to be Mitaher from Tumata Mate. So if they become to Mate Tumata Mate, it undermines their capacity or ability to give that Tahara. On the other hand, if it is another form of Tuma, that does not undermine or does not block its capacity to bring Tahara. So all those Mishnayot that speak about the problems of carrying the Mechatat in certain areas or in certain places are Chashashot for Tumat HaMeit. And there it's a problem. But if it's not Tumat HaMeit, then it's not a problem. So you have to distinguish in one of those two ways between the cases where we do worry about the Tumat HaChatat and cases where we don't worry about Tumat HaChatat. And the fact that the machloket here between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim with regards to lagin and taking over the tanur, as Rashi notes over here, that is a malahi lemechatat. This is not a general principle in Tuma. This is a unique issue with regards to mechatat, because over there the pasuk tells us that it has to be done tahor. We try as hard as possible to keep it, and so that's why over here they have this malah. Then ve'et ve'abaye. Abaye challenges his Rebbe Rabbo's explanation over here. It says, Mode Rabbi Akiva b'haza'a shevira al kli cheres tamei agevi mishkab mushab tamei shehi tehora. So now we have Rabbi Akiva saying that if you have a hazaah that went over a kli cheres tamei, or went over a mishkav or moshav tamei, she'it ora. She'en lecha davar shemitamei lamala kilamato. There is no form of tumah that has the capacity to mitamei things that are above it, just like it has the capacity to mitamei things below it. Ela kazayit mina meit v'shar kol ha-mehalim li'ituye even amnugat. Except for a kazayit mina meit, which is ohel ha-meit, when you have tumah ha-meit spreads throughout the entire ohel, the entire area that is covered, and anything else that has din of tumat ohel, which is tumat Eben Amnugat, it's a stone that has a neg on it, or even a person that has nigaim tzorat on them, they have a din like a mate, and therefore they're mitameh ba'ohel. But those are the only things that have that capacity, but nothing else has that capacity. And so now you see here, Rabbi Kiva saying, even if the hazah went over a kli cheres tameh, which is the scenario that we saw before, with regards to the oven that had a sheretz inside of it, over here Rabbi Kiva says it's not tameh. So how can you explain Rabbi Kiva's position with regards to lagim to be about an object in motion, whether we look at it as either it's munach or not? If that was the case, then Rabbi Kiva couldn't say this statement. And so Abaye says, Rabba, your explanation of that machloket is incorrect. And therefore, Elamar Abaye, Abaye now says, to kuli ama lav ki munach dami. An object in motion is not considered as if it is settled at that point. And therefore, when they pull the lagim, the pitcher, from the window over the oven, nobody would think that that is tameh. Bahaka bahaka miflike. So then, what is the machloket? Why does Rabbi Kiva think it is tameh? The Rabbi Kiva savar gazrinan shemei anuach. The problem is that we're afraid that you might place it down on your way. And again, it's a marla in mechatat, but we're afraid that when you take it from the window towards you, you might place it down on the object that's tameh, and where it goes there, because of that it is tameh. Rabbanan savar lo gazrina. The Rabbanan say there is no such gzera. Umode Rabbi Kiva b'hazaah. Came into nafak, nafak. But when it comes to a hazaah, so then why did Abaye bring down the Rabbi Kiva says if you do a hazaah, a sprinkling of the mechatan, it crosses over something that's tamei, that it's not a problem. What happened to the gzeira? That's not a problem, because there's a big difference between something that's in motion in your hand versus something that you've already released. So in the case where you're trying to pull the pitcher from the window over the oven, you're still in control of the object. And therefore there's a risk that you might put it down. That risk that you might put it down is what we're gozer for. That's where Rabbi Kiva says it's tamei. On the other hand, when you do hazayah and you release the sprinklings towards the individual, and that's going to pass over something that's tamei, over there you don't have a gzeira of shema yanuach. Maybe it'll rest, or maybe you'll put it down because it's already in motion. Once you've released it, there's no chashash that you're going to place it down or it's going to go down in the area that's tamei. So that's the explanation now of the machloket between Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim. Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim. But now once you've done that, you've taken away Rabba's explanation of the machlok between Rabbi Lazar and the Chachamim. You said that the machlok between Rabbi Lazar and the Chachamim was the same machlok that Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim have. But now, you said that Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim don't argue about that issue. They argue about a gzera. So then, what's the machloket of Rabbi Lazar, Rabbanan, Maika Miflagei? What do they argue about? So, Amar Abaye, Bedanin Tumah Kedumah, Mitumah Sheba'utah Sha'ah Kamiflagei. They argue about whether you can extrapolate Tumah Kedumah, which is Tumah that is already existent, Mitumah Sheba'utah Sha'ah, from something that happens simultaneously. Mar Saver Danin, one says you can extrapolate, Mar Saver Ain Danim, and the other holds you can't be done. So now what the suggestion is that the case of Nida is the proof that Rabbi Lazar brings. Rabbi Lazar's proof is that when you sprinkle on a Nida, therefore you can see that Mechatat, when they become Tmeim, are still efficacious. Because he says, when the waters or the Mechatat hit the Nida, they become Tmeim. So at that moment, simultaneously, the Mechatat become Tmeim, and they are Mitaher, this Nida. So Rabbi Lazar says, you see from that, that something that's tamei is effective, because he's extrapolating from ba'oto sha'ah and saying now that if it was tumah k'tumah, meaning that if it was tumah that happened before it ever got sprinkled, then that still would work. And the Chachamim say the two cases are not parallel. In the case of nidah, it's ba'oto sha'ah. And the case where the mei chatah become tameim, and you want to say you can use them, that's already tumah k'tumah. And so they're not a parallel case. We agree with you, but the nidah it works, but that's because it happens simultaneously. But you can't extrapolate from simultaneous to zechar zeh. And that's the machloket between them. Now, to answer the question, what does this have to do with the question that was posed? Rav Chisni taza beget tamei mahu. When the dam sprinkles on the beget tamei, what's the din? So it's the same question over here. You have a question of oto sha'ah and keduma, which is that when you have tuma'ah keduma, when you have a case of tuma'ah keduma, we know that you do not require kibus beget. Now we have a case of otasha'a, which is at the moment that it hits the beged, it becomes tmei'a, and it's happening simultaneously. So the question is that the same thing? According to Rabbi Lazar, otasha'a and k'duma are identical. And so therefore, according to Rabbi Elazar, just like if it was k'duma, it was psula beforehand, it would not require kibbutz. So to over here, when otasha'a, it would not require kibbutz beged. The other hand, for the chachamim who believe that there's a distinction between k'duma and otasha'a, then in case of k'duma, where it was psul before it ever hit the beged, then in that case, it would be not require kibbutz. But if it happens simultaneously, over there it will require kibbutz, because just like by the case of the nida, that's not posel the mei chatat. So to over here, the dam is still, we'll call it live dam, when it hits the beged, even though at that moment it comes posel, and therefore they will require kibbutz in this instance. But then you have a question, which is, that the way that he phrased the answer was that, this is the machloket Rav Elazar and the chachamim, according to Rabbah, the way that Abaye answered it. Now, that implies that it's a machloket Rav Elazar and Chachamim, and Rabbah and Abaye are contributing towards this answer. The way that we just read the Gemara, Abaye undermines Rabbah. He thinks that Rabbah's whole explanation is incorrect, and then he corrects Rabbah's explanation. So why can't you just write that it's Rav Elazar and the Chachamim, Aliba da Abaye? That would have been the easiest way to say it. So Rashi explains over here, Mishum da Abaye Talmido Haya. Abaye was Rabbah's Talmid. Velo nechlakalav. He doesn't argue on him directly. Eladan lefanav. He was interacting with him as a Talmid. V'tirgem hadavar lefanav v'hodelo. That he explained or helped Rabbah come to the conclusion. And therefore, in the end, this is also Rabbah's view. Rabbah proposed something, and then Abaye and Rabbah are working it out. So even though in the end Abaye gives the answer is true not only for Abaye, but it's also true for a Rabbah. That's why Rashi deals with that problem and says that's why it's Rabbah and Abaye's explanation of the machloket of Rabbi Lazar and the Chachamim. Others want to suggest that it is a distinction between Rabbah and Rova. We're about to see that Rova gives a totally different explanation for the machloket between Rabbi Lazar and the Chachamim. And if you use Rava's explanation, you can't do that. So what it's saying is that Abaye, even though he rejects Rabbah's explanation of the machloket, he accepts Rabbah's explanation of the facts of the case. And so he agrees with Rabbah with regards to what the facts of the case are, he just disagrees with what the explanation is. But then there's Rova who says the facts of the case are totally different. And so that's what it means that it's Abaye in Rabbah. It's Abaye using the facts that Rabbah lays out that the case is built around. Because now you'll see that we have Rava Amar. Rava disagrees and says, the Kulei Amar ain't danin. Everybody agrees you cannot extrapolate from Otasha'a to Kiduma. V'hocha behaka miflege. So then what is the machlok between Rabbi Lazar and the Chachamim? The Rabbi Lazar savar, Hazah tzricha shiur. Rabbi Lazar believes that Hazah requires a shiur. There are two different shiurim that are associated with hazah. There's one shiur which is within the container that you're going to sprinkle from. There needs to be a minimum shiur of mechatat in that. There, everybody agrees you need a minimum because that comes from the pasuk, and we'll see that later on in today's daf. But you have to have a minimum amount of water, which is the kedei hazayah. You have to have enough to sprinkle with. So there is a minimum shiur. There is also another requirement of shiur. And this is where there's a machloket, which is when you actually sprinkle it on the individual, how much do you have to get onto the individual? So there are those that believe, ain't tzricha shiur. There's no shiur. Any amount of the mechatat that are sprinkled on the individual are successful at being mitaher the individual. Others suggest that there is some minimum shiur that must reach the individual. So he says, Rabbi Lazar savar hazat tzricha shiur. And that's Rabbi Lazar's opinion, that you do require a shiur. Umitztarfim lahazaot. And multiple hazaot can be mitztaref together, can join together to create that minimum shiur. So that means over here, when you sprinkle on the nida, and say you get on there just a little bit of the mei chatat, not enough to meet the minimum shiur, but you got some on there. Then you sprinkle again, and together with the first sprinkle, the second sprinkle now reaches that threshold of the minimum shiur. So there we say it's successful, and the nida is tehora from tumat amet. Again, once she goes to the mikveh, and once she's tahor from her tumat nida, together with that, she will attain tahara that's complete, meaning that she will also be tahor, tahora from the tumat amet. So what you see from that is, Rabbi Lazar believes, the first drop that went on there became tamei. She was a nida. The drop is now tamei. The next drop hits her, and now is mitzaref with the first drop, and together they get you to the minimum threshold. What that shows you is that the first drop that went on there became tamei, was still successful at providing tahara afterwards. So you see from a nida that even mechatat that is tamei still has the capacity to provide the tahara. Rabbanan Tzavrei Hazaa Ein Tzricha Shiur. The other hand, the Chachamim believe there's no minimum threshold for Meichatat. Never at the moment it hits the Nidah, that's when it provides the tahara, and it only becomes Tmeah simultaneously or at that moment anyway, and therefore you can't prove anything from there with regards to Meichatat that was Tamei from beforehand. And so according to Rabbi Lazar, where you can use two sprinklings to get to that level, the first sprinkling was already Tamei, and it's still Mitzdarif to the second one to be successful. If that's the case, that shows you that Meichatat that's Tamei is successful in providing Tahara. For the Chachamim who believe there's no minimum Shiur, they don't need that whole Tziruf. And the first waters that hit the Nidah are water Mitaher her. And since those waters that hit her are Mitaher her, you can't prove anything about waters that were Tmeim before the fact. So that's the way Rava explains it, and that's what I noted before, that Rava might be in distinction to Rava. Rava says there were two sprinklings done over here, whereas Rava says the case is a case of one sprinkling. And Abaye, who explains the Machloket Rav Elazar and the Chachamim, is using Rava's factual explanation, which is that it was only one sprinkling, and not Rava's explanation that it was a combination. It was sprinkled on it twice, which for Rabbi Elazar makes a difference, whereas for the Chachamim, it makes no difference because you're already Yotze with the first drops that hit. All right, now we move on to the latter part of the mission, which says Chatat Psula. If the Chatat in any way is problematic, then the Dam that goes on the Beged does not require Kibbutz. Tan Rabbanan, Midama. It says from its Dam. Midam Kshera, below Midam Psula. It's a Miut. That tells you that only from Dam Kshera is the requirement of Kibbutz. There is no requirement of Kibbutz from Dam Psula. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Haitala Shata Kosher V'Nifsala, Dama Ta'un Kibbutz. So this is Rabbi Akiva's opinion that we saw before, that if it does reach the individual after it had a point in time where it could have been Ra'oi Lahazaya, then it does require Kibbutz Beged. Lo'ayta Lashata Kosher, if it never reached the point where it was able to be used properly Kasher, V'Nifsala, and it became Pasul, Ein Dama Ta'un Kibbutz, then it does not require Kibbutz. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Echad Zeh Ve'Echad Zeh, Ein Dama Ta'un Kibbutz. No matter which way it happens, it do not require kibbutz. So the true machloket here is between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shimon. The original statement is a statement of the Chachamim or a Braita that just brings you from the Pasuk, which says that, Kol asher yigav bibsara yigdash, v'asher yizeh midama ala beged, asher yizeh ala techabez v'makom kadosh. So the Braita just says midama means not all dam. Some dam is problematic, some dam is not problematic. The distinction that the Braita brings is Dam Psula is not problematic. Dam Kshera is problematic. Rabbi Kiva and now Rabbi Shimon argue about what does Kshera and Psula mean. Rabbi Shimon takes it literally and says, if it's Dam Kshera, that's still Ra'ui LaHazaya, that's what requires you then to do Kibbutz. If it is Dam Psula, there's no requirement of Kibbutz. Rabbi Kiva says that's not the definition over here. Kshera doesn't mean it's now Kshera LaHazaya. It means if at any time it was Kshera LaHazaya, then it requires kibbutz. Psula means it was never ra'ui lahazaya, and that's why it doesn't require kibbutz. So they're arguing in the explanation of what it means, midama, the distinction between psula and kshera. My time at the Rabbi Shimon, what is Rabbi Shimon's reasoning? It says, k'tivota, k'tiv midama, had chaycha da'ila shato kosher. You have two miyutim over here. First one is called sheyga b'psara yikdash, v'sheyza midama. Al beged asher yizeh ala techabez b'makom kadosh. So that's mitama. The word ota also appears later on, which is kol zachar b'kohanim yochal ota kodesh kodeshim hi. So the ota is also a miut. So now you have two miutim, and Rabbi Shimon says one miut tells you that when it was pasul all along, it doesn't require kibbutz. The second miut teaches you even b'shata kosher, even if at one point it was kasher, but now it's no longer kasher, that also does not require kibbutz. Rabbi Akiva, Ota Prat L'Truma. Rabbi Akiva says, the Ota comes to tell you that Truma does not require Kibbutz Beged. Rabbi Shimon L'Ta'ame. So why doesn't Rabbi Shimon need the Ota to exclude Truma? Da'amar Kodshim Kalim Ein Tunim Mirika B'Shtifa Makoshekein Truma. And Rabbi Shimon is to his Shita that Kodshim Kalim do not require Mirika B'Shtifa. That's something we'll get to later on in the Perek. B'Koshke and Truma. And then certainly Truma does not have that requirement. Now, this has to do with the fact that the Psukim that we are using over here psukim that we actually dealt with a little earlier, the tail end of this. But these psukim deal with a number of mitzvot with regards to a chatat. And that is, Ve'deber Hashem Moshe Limor, Deber Aaron Ve'el Banav Limor, Zot Torat HaChatat, B'makom Asher Tishachet Olah, Tishachet HaChatat, Lifnei Hashem Kodesh Kodeshim Hi. So the Zot Torat HaChatat we already used to tell us that there's Torah Chat, the Chol HaChataot. And we use that to tell us that it's not only applicable to the Chatot HaChitzonot, it's also applicable to the Chatot HaPnimiyot. Then a konein hamichate uta yochalena b'makom kadosh te'achel b'chatzar omoed. So then that is the rule that the primary korban that we're speaking about here is a chatat achitzona, which includes something that is eaten. And that's why we need now a riboy for the chatot of pnimiyot with regards to the following din, which is kol ashei yigav b'psara yidash, ashei yizah midama, ala beger ashei yizah aleh t'chabez b'makom kadosh. So what we're dealing here with is the kibbuz beged when the dam splashes on the beged. But then there's an additional din here, which is uchli cheres, asher tuvushal bo yishaver. Any kli cheres which is cooked in needs to be broken. V'im kli nechoshet bushala, it was cooked in a metallic kli, umorak v'shutaf b'mayim, it requires merika v'shtifa, which we'll get to later on as to what that is exactly, but it requires a certain amount of cleansing of the kli in order for it to be utilized afterwards. So it seems that that din also is uniquely associated with a chatat. And then at the end it says, kol zachar b'kohanim yochol latak, kodesh kodeshim hi. So then any kohanim who eat it, kodesh kodeshim hi. And then the last one is the pasuk that we spent a lot of time on in the past, which is v'chol chatat, asher yuva midama elo moed, l'chaper b'kodesh, lo te'achel b'esh tisarei, that any dam from a chatat that goes into the echal becomes pasul, or makes the korban chatat pasul. So now here you have a list of different dinim that apply to a chatat, and the question is, how limited is it to a chatat? That we already discussed with the last pasuk, we had the machloket and the mishnah, as to whether it's uniquely associated with a chatat, or applies to a chatat and asham, or does it apply to all kodshei kodashim? That din of bringing the dam into the echal, that it's posel other korbanot. So that machloket existed there. That same machloket we're going to see in the upcoming Mishnayot about kli cheres and kli nechoshet, where they have to break the kli cheres and the kli nechoshet, you have to cleanse them out. Does that only apply to a chatat? Does that apply to kodshei kodashim? Does it even apply to kodshim kalim? So Rabbi Shimon says only a chatat and kodshei kodashim. Kodshim kalim are not included in this din. Kodshim kalim are not included in this din. Certainly truma is not included in this din because kodshim kalim are much more kadosh and closer in genre to the kodshei kodashim and chatat. If they don't require it, then certainly truma doesn't require it. And then we have the din that we're discussing, which is kibbuz beged. Miut is found in two of those locations. One of them is about the kibbuz beged. The other one is about the kelim. And what we're saying here is that the miut by the beged is clearly coming to tell you that, which is pasul, is not to require kibbuz beged. But then we want to know, what's the definition of that psul? So Rabbi Shimon says, well, I have another miut by the kli cheres and the kli nechoshet, that miut we use to teach us that even b'shat kosher it's still considered to be pasul. On the other hand, Rabbi Kiva says, I need the otah to exclude truma, because obviously Rabbi Kiva believes that kochim kalim are also affected by the din that is stated in the pasuk, and then he needs otah to tell me not truma. Once he does that, he only has one miut left, which is the miut of midama. And therefore, he only excludes the thing which is the least chidush, which is to say when it was pasol from the outset. If it was pasol from the outset, then it doesn't require kibbuz beged. Okay, next Mishnah says, nitaz min atzavar ala beged. If the blood splashed directly from the neck of the animal onto the beged, enu taun kibbuz. It does not require kibbuz. Now, the Bali Tosfot asks over here, what is the question? That is something that should be so obvious because we already said if you weren't mekabel the dam bekli, then it's not a kosher lahazayah and there's no din of kibbuz. So obviously if it goes directly from the neck of the animal onto the beged, then it is pasul. So what is even the question here? Why does the mission need to mention it? So Tosfot just says, hacha shiny mishum de bevat achad. This is a different din because it's happening simultaneously, which is that the dam that's leaving the tzavar, when it hits the beged, that's what makes it psul, because it's not going into a kli now. So since the psul happens at the same moment it hits the beged, maybe that's why you might have thought that it requires kibbuz. The Mishnah comes to tell you that it's not the case. But that still does not answer the question we had above, Bamine Rami Barchamim Rav Chista. What happens if it hits the beged that is tamei? That's also something that happens simultaneously. So why isn't this an answer to that question? When something happens simultaneously, there's no requirement of kibbutz. So here there's still another distinction. The one in the Mishnah is a case where it was never ro'i l'hazaya. It never reached a point in time where it was ro'i l'hazaya. The case in the question that Rami Bar Chama is asking Rav Chisda, it's a case where it was already in a kli, and now it's splashing out of the kli onto the beged. So it was kasher l'hazaya, and that's why that question still stands, and it's a machlok between Rav Lezer and the Chachamim. Whereas the Mishnah over here, which says when it happens b'vat achad, it's no good, that was when it was pre the point where it was kasher l'hazaya. Now, if it bounces min hakeren, v'chein min hayesod, if it bounces off the keren, which is where the matnot dam of a chatat go, if it bounces off that onto the beged, it does not require kibbutz. Min ha-yesod, the Gemara is going to reread that to mean not directly from the yesod, but min ha-ra'oi li-yesod. Something that already had the matnot dam that were finished, and now it's going towards the yesod, that already does not require hazayah, because the minase mitzvata, enu ta'un kibbutz, those don't require kibbutz because the mitzvah is already done. If it bounces off the keren, or it's in a case where it's already ra'ui liyasod, then it doesn't have a din of kibbutz. Nishpach al ritzpa v'asafo. If it falls on the ground and then he gathers it up, ain't own kibbutz. There's no requirement of kibbutz. This goes back to much earlier in the Masechta, which is if you shecht an animal and the dam falls onto the floor, then you can't go afterwards and collect it into the kli, that's missing kabbalat kli. Therefore, that dam is pasul, and gathering into the kli is not going to help you. Since it's dam that's not really the hazaya, it's not going to have a demand for kibbutz. Ain't on kibbutz, el dam shnit kabel b'kli, if the dam went into a kli, v'ra'oi l'hazaya. Because then, even if it spills on the ground and you pick it up, then it would be ra'oi l'hazaya, and that would require kibbutz. So you're right, if there was kabbalat kli, then if it spills after that, that dam is still ra'ui l'hazaya, because if it's collected and put back into the kli, it has a din that the hazaya would work in that case. Therefore, if it splashes on the beged, it would require a kibbutz. All right, Tan Rabbanan. Yechol nitaz min etzavar ala beged yei ta'un kibbutz. You would think if it splashed from the tzavar directly on the beged require kibbutz. Tamalomar asher yazeh. So the pasuk says that it has to be yazeh. Lo amarti lecha ela b'ra'ui l'hazaa. It's only something that's ra'ui to go on the mizbeach and to be used as hazayah on the mizbeach. Tani idach, yachol nitan min hakeren u'min hayesod yei ta'un. I'm sorry, yachol nitaz min hakeren u'min hayesod yei ta'un kibbutz. You would think if it bounced off the mizbeach and then hit the beged would require kibbutz. Tamalomar asher yazeh. Prat l'zeh shekvar huza. It's only something that will in the future, asher yazeh, can be sprinkled on the mizbeach. Not something that's already huza, that was already sprinkled on the mizbeach. Now, nishpach al ritzpa, if it falls on the floor, it no longer requires a kibbutz beged because now it is dam pasul. Ha tu lomali. What do I need this extra piece of information at the end over here? Matam kamar. It says it's not giving you any more information. It's actually explaining the reason for the din before. Matam nishpach al ritzpa vasafo ein taun kibbutz. Why is it that when it falls on the floor and it is collected that you don't require kibbutz because the fish ain't on kibbutz. So the dam shnit kabel b'kli v'roi l'hazaya. Because only dam that went into a kli and was roi l'hazaya is something that requires a kibbutz. So it's giving the explanation for the previous din. The previous din, why is it when it falls in the ritzpah, you don't have to do kibbutz? Because it's not kasher l'hazaya. Because that's what the next line tells you. Anything that is kasher l'hazaya is what requires kibbutz. Alright, so now the Gemara says, ra'oi l'haza, l'mu'te mai. What does it mean that it is ra'oi l'hazaya? What does that come to exclude? L'mu'te kibel pachot mikdei hazaya b'klizeh, pachot mikdei hazaya b'klizeh. Comes to exclude a case where you had kabbalat adam in two different kelim. One keli has less than the minimum requirement of hazaya, and the other one has the less than the minimum requirement of hazaya. And then you combine them together, and now you have the minimum shiur, you reach that threshold. Now the threshold, as we know by dam and by the mechatat, is sufficient amount of dam to do the hazayot that you need to do. So the kabbalat dam requires that you have a single kabbalat dam, and in that kabbalat dam, you accomplish the necessary volume of dam that would allow you to do the hazayot. So what it's saying here is that ra'ui l'hazayah comes to exclude a case where the dam is ra'ui l'hazaya, but you did it in such a manner that it's not going to work. And that is because you took less than the minimum shear, less than the minimum shear, and then you combined them together. And now he says, how do we know that? Because, Titanio, we have a braita, Rabbi Chalafta bar Sha'ul omer, kidesh pachot mikdei hazaya b'kli zeh, pachot mikdei hazaya b'kli zeh, lo kidesh. this is not about Artin. This is about a Mechatat. When it comes to the waters of the Paraduma, so if you put ashes into water that were less than the minimum volume of water that you needed, and do the same in another Kli, and then you combine them together to get to the minimum Shiur, it does not work. Now, the way that our Gemara reads is Yibayelahu. It's a question that's being posed, and that doesn't make any sense over here because they're making a statement of fact. Therefore, you look on the side, it says, Ve'ibayelahu. And then we ask the question, Vidam Mahu. What's the story with Dam? Meaning Hazayat Adam. Hilchatahu? The din by Paraduma is Alacha L'Moshe Misinai, and you cannot extrapolate from Alacha L'Moshe Misinai. Alacha L'Moshe Misinai is always a unique and particular din that cannot be extrapolated. The moors of logic do not affect it. And therefore, just because it's true by the Mechatat doesn't mean it's going to be true by the Dam. Odilma Hata Maitaimo. Maybe the reasoning that it's true by the Mechatat is because the Tiv Bitaval Bamayim. Because it says that you will dip in the waters. Hachanami kitiv v'taval badam. Over here it also says v'taval badam. As Rashi points out, you can see this in the Shita Mekubetzet Ot Chet, that there's a difference between bamayim and bimayim. If it said v'taval bimayim, then it would mean that you just have to dip it in the waters. But when it says that you have to dip it bamayim, in the waters, meaning that the waters that were already mentioned before, and the waters that are mentioned before, are the sprinklings that you're going to do with the water. And from there you learn that there's a minimum shiur in order to mikadesh the water. That is, has to be daval bamayim, the waters that are sufficient to do what is incumbent upon you, which is the sprinkle over here. And so therefore, when you go to, you take the mayim and mikadesh the mayim, it has the sufficient water in it that it will be mikadesh the amount that you would require for hazayah. That comes from bamayim versus bimayim. And we have a similar phraseology, or we have similar vowelization by dam, where it says v'taval badam, that you will dip it into the blood. And just like by the waters, it says taval b'mayim, over here it says v'taval badam, that tells you that dam has that same minimum requirement. And that's how we know that the din of the Mishnah, Kedei Hazayah, is coming to exclude this case, where you did you have dam that was nitkabel, that was less than the minimum threshold, and another kabbalat Bikli, that was less than the minimum threshold. If you combine them afterwards, it's not going to work. So therefore, it's also not going to demand kibbutz beged if that dam splashes on the individual. So Tashma, Dam Rab Zika Am Rab Lazar, Af B'dam Lo Kidesh. Also, by dam, it's not mikadesh, and that's because the word badam is used just like bamayim. So now, Amar Rava, Tanya, we have a braita that tells us that when it says v'taval badam, v'lo misapeg, and not a case where you sponged it up. Badam. From the word badam, we learn out, ajay badam shiur tvilam mikara, that you have in the dam already sufficient amount of dam, that when you dip your finger in it, you could do all the hazayot that are required. Min adam, which is also in the pasuk, min adam shiba inyan, from the dam that is found in this context. And now the Gemara is going to explain this. Ve'itztrich, and we need all these limudim, limichtab badam, because if katab rachmana v'taval, had I only had the requirement that you dip your finger in the dam in order to do the avodah, havamina afu be delekesh shiur tvila meikaru. Even though there wasn't sufficient dam in the kli from the outset, as long as you dipped your finger in the dam, it is fine. So that's why katav rachmana badam. The same thing by bamayim before, also badam, to tell you that you have to have sufficient dam from the outset to do all the hazayot through tvila all the way along. Bikatav rachmana badam. If it just said that you need badam, Havamina afilu misapeg, that you don't have to actually dip your finger in the blood to get blood on your finger and then do the sprinkling. You could simply wipe it on the edge of the kli or on the base of the kli that had dam on it. And then from that dam, collect the dam by wiping it over there, not dipping it. So that's why, katav rachmana v'taval, that the word taval teaches you that you have to do a dipping. So you get two dinim over here. One din is that from the outset, you must have sufficient dam to do all the hazayot that you need to do. The second din that you have here is v'taval. For every hazayah that you do, you must dip your finger in to do that hazayah. You can't simply scoop up the blood. Now, the last limud, which is min adam shebi inyan limute mai, what does that come to exclude? Amarava limute shirayim shebi etzba. That comes to tell you that the blood that is the residue of blood on the finger, or the residual of the blood on the finger, is pasul. Which means that once you've sprinkled dam, after dipping it in the dam, and then you sprinkled it with your finger, there might be enough dam on your finger to do another sprinkling. So what it says, min adam shebinyan, means that you require a dipping for every hazaya, and the dam that remains on your finger after you've done hazaya is already dam that is deemed to be shiraim, and you can't sprinkle with that dam anymore. And that's what it means, min adam shebinyan. You've got to go back into the original dam. Every time, you've got to go back to the original dam and get dam in order to do this sprinkling. Mar says, misayile the Rabbi Elazar. This is supportive of Rabbi Elazar's opinion. Damar Rabbi Elazar, shiraim shebe'etzba psulim. Shiraim, the leftover on the finger, you can't use that for the subsequent hazaya. Amalei Ravin baravado. The way we have it here is larav, which is very difficult because of the way that it's Ravin barav. Ado, who's speaking, and he's not necessarily a contemporary of Rav, so it doesn't make so much sense to say Rav over here. The real problem comes up is because the next line of the Gemara is speaking about Rav Amram. And so Rav Amram is both a Talmid of Rav, but also later on is a contemporary of Bayin Rava. So the question is, which Rav Amram we're speaking about? And that obviously will influence who you think is being spoken to here. So our Gemara has Amalei Rav Avin bar Ravado the Rav, assuming that it's this Rav Amram, the Talmud of Rav. But that wouldn't make so much sense because it's Ravin Barado. And therefore it makes more sense to say that it's Rova. And you can see that change in the gears of the Masorah Shas. He changes it to Amalei Ravin Barav Ado Le Rova. And then he says, Amar Talmidcha. Your Talmid says. Now your Talmid is Ravin Baravada. Ravin Baravava was a Talmud of Rova. And he didn't want to directly challenge his Rebbe. So he says it in like a third person about your Talmid. Amar Talmidcha, Amar Rav Amram. He says that your Talmid says that Rav Amram brings something down which would be contradictory to what was just being posed over here. When Rava says the Mute Shiraim Shebe Etzba, then he's saying Rav Amram's statement seems to undermine that. So he's asking it in a way that's respectful and saying that Rav Amram disagrees with Rava, but he didn't want to challenge Rava directly. So he says, Tanina, Hayamazeh, he was sprinkling. And then the stuff sprinkles off his finger. Before he sprinkled it, don't kibus. It doesn't require kibus. Mishihiza, once it's already sprinkled, ain taun kibus. It no longer requires kibus. My love, what is the explanation of that braita? Hachikamar. Achlo gamar melazot taun kibus. If he has yet to finish the hazaot that are incumbent upon him, then the dam still requires kibus. Misha gamar lazot, once he finishes doing the sprinklings that are incumbent upon him, ain't taun kibus. He no longer requires kibus. That would then say that even after you've done the first hazaya, what's residual on your finger still requires kibus. If it requires kibus, it's only true when it's ra'oi the hazaya. That means that the dam that is residual on the finger, ra'oi the hazaya, and it's not pasul like you said, Rava. So it says, well, you misunderstood that braita. Hachi kamar, this is what the braita is saying. Achol yatzta hazaa miyado ton kibus. When he's going to sprinkle with his finger, before it leaves his finger, it requires kibus. Mishi yatzta hazaa miyado ain't tagun kibus. Once it's left his finger, it no longer requires kibus, because whatever's residual on his finger is no longer kasher the hazaya, and therefore the dam on the finger no longer requires kibus. Eitevei abaye. Is that really true? Gamar milhazot. If he finishes doing the hazayot, this is by the paraduma that is processed on Har HaZeitim. There's a requirement as part of that that there are matnot dam, mean hazayot of dam, keneged kodesh hakodeshim, when you process the paraduma on Har HaZeitim. But there's also a requirement to burn the paraduma in its entirety. And in there it includes et orah ve'et b'sara ve'et dama. The dam also needs to be burnt. So now he says, what do you do then? He sprinkled the dam towards the Kodesh HaKodeshim. Now he's dam on his finger. What's he going to do with that dam? Umekaneach yado b'gufa shel para. He wipes off that blood that's on his finger onto the para so that the dam will be burnt with the remainder of the para. Gamar in, lo gamar lo. That's only when he finishes doing all the hazayot does he wipe it on the para. Before that point in time, he does not wipe it on the para. What you see from that is the dam that was on his finger until he finishes, is ra'oi lahazaya, and it's ra'oi to do another sprinkling. Samalei, gamar, mekaneach yado b'gufa shel para. Lo gamar, mekaneach etzbo. He says the difference is not in whether he's finished all the hazayot, or not finished hazayot, it's whether he has to wipe his finger off. It's where he wipes his finger off. When he's finished all the hazayot, then he wipes his finger on the para. But between each hazaya, he also has to wipe his finger. But he doesn't wipe his finger on the para. Now Rashi says the reason is because the Para Aduma and Hazayot are done in two different locations. We're not going to demand that every time he does Hazayah, he goes all the way down to the Para and comes back again. That's what Rashi explains. The Baal Tosafot quote that Rashi. He says that Rashi is wrong. That doesn't make any sense. Because we see from, or not from Torah, from the Midrash Halacha, that the Hazayot and the processing of the Para Aduma were done in the same location. So he says, I favor what Rashi says over here in our Gemara, that the problem is if you wipe your finger on the Para Aduma between the sprinklings, you're going to get hair on your finger. And then the hair is going to act as a chatzitza for the next Hazayah. We don't want you wiping it on the Para Aduma in the interim, because that's going to cause chatzitzot for you. On the other hand, if it is at the end of the process, then we have no problem with you doing that. Because then we don't worry about chatzitza anymore, and we want the dam to be, quote-unquote, preserved and burnt along with the Para Aduma. So at that point, we tell you to wipe your finger on the Para Aduma. What you learn from that is that you require wiping after each instance, not just at the end. The difference between the end and the other instances is where you wipe it. At the end, you wipe it on the Para Aduma. The other instances, you wipe it. But then, it's not a question any longer on Rava, who says that the residual blood on the finger is not Ra'ui L'Hazayah. Because it isn't Ra'ui L'Hazayah. But we still want you to wipe it off. So how do you wipe it off? And that's what the Gemara is going to say here. So Ella Bishlama, Gemara says, Bishlama Gamar Mekaneach Yadobu Gufashel Para. I understand why at the end of the process that he wipes his finger off on the Gufashel Para, Shenemar V'sarafet Para Le'enaf. You have to burn the Para, and the Para being burnt is not just it, it's Ora, Psara, Dama, Pirsha. So the Dama is included in those items that need to be burnt. Ela Etzba'o, B'may Mekaneach. But between that Zayot, according to you, Rava, where does he wipe his finger if it's not on the Para? So Marabaye, so Abaye answers on behalf of Rava, Bisvat Mizrak. He wipes it off on the edge of the utensil that's holding the blood. Kirichtiv, because like we have the Pasuk in Ezra that says, Kifurei Zahav. They call the Mizrakim in which they collect the blood, Kifurei Zahav, Kapara. And the word Kfor means to wipe or to cleanse one's finger off. Why were they called Kifurei Zahav if they're Mizrakot for a collection of Kabbalat Adam? Because the Kohen used to wipe his finger on the edge. When he had residual dam in his finger, he'd wipe it on the edge of the utensil. And so they have the name of Kaparot or Kapara because they are being wiped on by the finger of the Kohen. All right, next Mishnah. Nitaz al or, if it sprinkles on the hide of the animal. Achalo hufshat, before it's been flayed, enudon kibus. It does not require cleansing because it was not ro'oi the hazayah. Misha hufshat, once the skin is already flayed and the hide is taken off, ton kibus, tibri Rabbi Yehuda. That's Rabbi Yehuda's position. Rabbi Elazar omer, af misha hufshat, eno ton kibus. Even after the hide has been flayed and taken off, it does not require kibus. Ela, the only time you require kibus is, ela makoma dam, the location where the dam sprinkled, the davar shu ra'ui lekabel tuma, something that has the capacity to become tameh, vira'ui lekibus, and it's also something that can in general be laundered. So those are the three qualifications of what make it that you would require kibus when the dam comes on it. So now, the first of which is makoma dam, which is that you don't have to launder the whole thing, you only have to launder the area where the dam is. The second qualification is something that's ra'ui lekabel tuma. And as Rashi notes over here, this is following the shita of Rabbi Yehuda, which we're going to see in the Gemara, that the machloki between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Elazar is, what type of kabbalat tuma do you need? According to Rabbi Yehuda, it has to be something that has the potential to be mikabel tuma, even though right now it's not mikabel tuma. Whereas Rabbi Elazar, it has to actually now be able or have the capacity to mikabel tuma. And so over here, where the Mishnah says, ra'uid lekabel tuma, that's the language used by Rabbi Yehuda, which indicates that even something with the potential to be a mikabel tuma, meaning that if you changed your mind about this object, it would have the capacity to be mikabel tuma, that's sufficiently ra'ui in order to say that if the dam splashes on it, it would require a kibus. But even Rabbi Yehuda agrees, if you're mechuser masa, if you're missing an action in order to make it ra'ui the kabel tuma, that is not far enough along that we would say that such an item requires kibus beged. Although the Rambam believes that Rabbi Yehuda's position goes as far as to say that ra'ui the kabel tuma means once the hide comes off the animal, since it is ra'ui the kabel tuma, whether that is missing a machshava, whether it's missing a maaseh, that's far enough along, according to Rabbi Yehuda, to deem it ra'ui the kabel tuma. and therefore if blood splashes on it, it would require kibbutz beged. The third qualification is that it has to be ra'ui l'kibbutz, something that you can launder. Obviously, that would exclude things that cannot be laundered, which are metallic kelim or kli cheres. Those are things that you do not launder. So now, echad ha-beged, ve'echad ha-sak, ve'echad ha-or, tu'unim kibbutz. Whether it's beged, sak, or, all of those things require a kibbutz. The Torah only says beged. And as Rashi notes over here, the word beged, as we're going to see in the Gemara, might have limited you to tzemer u'pishtim. So that's not true, because we have a ribui, which we're going to see, that includes other materials. So all of those are tu'unim kibbutz. Va'kibbutz v'makom kadosh. It has to be done in a holy place, meaning in the Azara. Ushvirat kli cheres b'makom kadosh. Similarly, the dinim that we read before from those psukim, which include the breaking of the kli cheres when the chatar is cooked in it, that is done b'makom kadosh also. Umrika v'shtifa b'kli nechoshet b'makom kadosh. And the cleansing, the washing out of the kli nechoshet that had a korban chatar inside of them, that's also done b'makom kadosh. That's also done in the Azara. Zechomer b'chatat mikodshei kodoshim. This is something that is uniquely associated with the chatat that is not true by other kodshei kodoshim. Rashi over here limits this statement to kibbutz. The requirement of kibbutz begadim is limited to a chatat and is not a requirement by other kodshei kodoshim. The Rambam, on the other hand, seems to think that this statement has broader implications and not just about the kibbutz begadim, but also has to do with the requirement of shvirat kli cheres. The requirement of shvirat kli cheres is only true by a chatat, and is not true by other korbanot. And then you'll have to deal with the issue, which is that by other korbanot, you still have the same problem, which is that it's balua, that the kli cheres is something that absorbs and is not polate, and therefore you have a problem of notar from the korbanot that's inside the kli cheres. So you'd have to break it for other korbanot as well, not just for a chatat. So what you have to explain is that by a chatat, you require shvira b'makom kadosh. You require it to be broken in a holy place. Whereas for the kodshei kodoshim, other kodshei kodoshim, there's no requirement that it be broken in the place that is kadosh, as well as the possibility that you could be mishtamesh b'tzonein, that maybe you could use it with cold items where there's no absorption, that maybe that would be mutar by kodshei kodoshim, and may not be mutar by chatat, because there's a requirement by the chatat that you break the kli. So that's what you have to explain according to the Rambam, who thinks this is also a distinction between a chatat and kodshei kodoshim. Minahani milet. Where do we know this from? The Tan Rabbanan. Beged. The Torah says beged, as Rashi notes over here, beged means semer upishtin. En li ele beged. Minayin arubot or shuhushat. How do I know you're also going to include a hide that was flayed, that was already taken off the animal? Tomal Omar, asher yazeh aleha techabes. Whatever is sprinkled on needs to be laundered. So there's a ribui. Yoko shani miraveh or shat. If that's the case, maybe it also should include a hide before it is flayed. Tamal Omar beged compares it to a beged. Ma beged aru'u the kabel tuma, afkol aru'u the kabel tuma. The feature of beged that we're focusing on is that it has the capacity to accept tuma. So too, with regards to a hide, it has to be something that is ra'u'i the kabel tuma. When it's still on the animal, it's not ra'u'i the kabel tuma because it can't be made into a kli at that point in time. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. That's Rabbi Yehuda's reasoning in the Mishnah. Rabbi Elazar Omer, beged, ein li ela beged, minayin robot sak, v'chol minei begadim. How do I know to include all other materials? Talmud Lomar, asher aleha techabes. Whatever's on it needs to be laundered. So those are items that also can be laundered, and therefore they're included in the demand here. Yehosha nimrabeh, or mishehufshat. I would think that you would include an or once it's already been flayed. Tamal Omar beged. That's what you learn from the word beged. Mat beged davar mekabel tuma. Av kol davar de mekabel tuma. So too, it has to be something that's mekabel tuma. Well, then you just have the same limud. Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yehuda both came to the same conclusion, which is that it has to be like a beged. And just like a beged is mekabel tuma, so too an or is mekabel tuma. So the Gemara asks the question, which is my benayu. Then what's the difference between them? What's the difference between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Elazar, if they both require at least at minimum that it's mekabel tuma? Amar Abaye, what's the difference between them? Matlit pchuta mishalosh. It is a piece of cloth that is less than the way that we have the girsa is shalosh, which would be shalosh etzbaot, shalosh by shalosh etzbaot. The Rambam's girsa over here is shlosha, which would be less than shlosha, shlosha by shlosha tfachim. That's the difference between them. Manda mar ra'ui hanami ra'ui. The one who says that it's ra'ui the mekabel tuma, this too could be ra'ui the kabel tuma. D boy, chashivale. Because if he wants to, he could think about it. Meaning that if he decides to use this for a patch on his beged, it would be bikabel tuma. Inherently, the size of beged is below the minimum threshold of a beged. Therefore, it's not mikabel tuma. But if you consider using it not for a beged, but for a patch, or in a way that makes it functional, then in a sense you're machshiv it. You give it a certain amount of importance, and because that's the case, it will be mikabel tuma. So here it says, since it's ra'oy lekabel tuma, what does ra'oy lekabel tuma mean? It has the possibility of being mikabel tuma. Not that it's actually mikabel tuma now, but it even has the possibility. The only thing standing between you and the possibility of it mikabel tuma is your thought. If you thought about it, you would get there. Now he would agree that if you chuser maseh, if there's an action that needs to be required to be taken, then everybody agrees that it's not ro'oy lekabel tuma. That's the way the Rashi learns it. That's the way the Baalei Tosafot learn it. The Rabbis don't even argue, but there's a very large Tosafot you can see here in Rashi that argue that even Rabbi Yehuda, who says mishu hufshat, it is mekabel tuma, he agrees in a case where it's missing is mechuser maseh. Man davar de mekabel tuma, ha'mi alo la bat kibulei tumahi. According to Rabbi Lazar, who says it has to be a mekabel tuma, it's not mekabel tuma. So if you look carefully at the difference between Rabbi Yehuda's statement before and Rabbi Lazar's statement, Yehuda says it has to be ra'ur lekabel tuma. And Rabbi Lazar says it has to be davar ha'mikabel tuma. So Rabbi Lazar says, only once it's mekabel tuma is it something that is requiring kibus. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, even if it's ra'oy lekabel tuma, it don't kibus. The difference between them is when, through a machshova, you could have made it into something that's ra'oy. It would be mekabel tuma. So that is ra'oy lekabel tuma. But it's not something that is mekabel tuma. And that's the nafkamina between them. Rova amar, beged shechishev alei letzur'ah, ikabinayu. It's a case where you have a beged and you're going to put embroidery on it. You're going to stitch on top of it some sort of picture or some sort of item. So, manda ma ra'oy, hanami ra'oy. This is also ra'oy because if he decides to forego the stitching, then it right away would be mekabel tuma. So, all that stands between this item and its ability to be mekabel tuma is this person's thought. If he decides he doesn't want to put the embroidery on it, it'll be mekabel tuma. That's ra'oy, the kabel tuma. Dei bai mevatalei. Because he can undermine or he can erase his machshava that he wants to put the embroidery on, and then right away it would be mekabel tuma, because then the hide is usable in its current state. Mandavar davar mekabel tuma, Rabbi Lazar says it has to be something that's mekabel tuma, hashtami alav bat kubulei tumai. At this point in time, it's not able to be mekabel tuma, because you had a machshava to put embroidery on it. That embroidery makes it there's no gemar malacha, and therefore there's no mekibalat tuma. Now, as Rashi points out, even though we say that machshava is not mutzimi de machshava by tuma, that's only in a case when you're trying to make it tahor, removing the capacity to mekabel tuma. You're trying to stop it from having the capacity to mekabel tuma. I mean, if you originally thought to do it without embroidery, and then later you change your mind that you're going to embroider it, that you can't do. That won't change the fact that it was ra'oy lekabel tuma. But the other way around, where you had in mind to embroider it, which stops it from being mekabel tuma, then if you have a machshava not to embroider it, that does make it that it's ro'oy lekabel tuma. Now here you have ikadamri, because it says Rav Amar, which we just said Rav Amar, so likely there should be ikadamri over here. The Rav Amar, utzpa, the chashev elei, the kitza, ikabinayu. You have an untrimmed piece of leather that he thought about trimming, that is the difference between them. Manda ma ro'oy hanami ru'uya. So if you decide you're not going to trim it anymore, because you could just decide that you're going to use it as a throw, you're going to use it as a bed, you're going to use it for some purpose that it doesn't need to be trimmed for, you could be make it ra'oy lekabel tuma immediately if you just mevatel the machshav otherwise. Man davar davar mekabel tuma, ha'alav mekabel tuma, ad mekatzalo. One who says that it needs to be mekabel tuma, over here, it's not mekabel tuma until you trim it, until you cut it. And therefore, at this point in time, it's not mekabel tuma. And so that's why Rabbi Lazar says it won't be something that requires kibus. Vahatanyo, and this is a brayta benichuta. It's a proof. Rabbi Shimon ben Menasseh omer utzpa shechishev alei liktza. If an utzpa untrimmed piece of leather that you thought about cutting it, Torah adchi yaktziana, it is tahor until you actually cut it, because it doesn't have gemar malacha until you carry out the thought process that you had. And that'll be the difference between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Lazar in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda just says it has to have the capacity to become mekabel tuma. Not that it's actually brought you the kabel tuma now, but all that stands between it is if you have a machshava, you could bring it to that point. So that means it's ra'oy the kabel tuma. It can't be mekabel tuma, but it is ra'oy the kabel tuma. that already requires kibbutz beged if a chatat splashes on it. Now then, Rabbi Elazar demands that it be mikabel tuma. It has to have the capacity right now to be mikabel tuma. If you have a machshava that stands between that and the ability for it to be mikabel tuma, it's not mikabel tuma, and therefore it's not subject to kibbutz begadim. And if the dam splashes on it, it won't require a kibbutz. But both of them agree, at least according to the Bali Tosfot and Rashi, that if it's mechuser maseh, if it has a lack in the maseh, I mean that it requires an action to be mitakin it, even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that that is not mekabel tuma. It has to be something where you're at the point where that all that stands between you and the ability to be mekabel tuma is a machshava. But if it requires a maseh, an action, then everybody agrees that it's not even considered to be ro'oy lekabel tuma, then it won't require the kibbutz begadim from the dam chatat that splashes on. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots in the middle of Tzadi Dalet Amud Aleph.